And what we just heard there were the beautiful sounds of a team of fat bikers up by James Bay. We're going to hear more from these guys later in this episode. Dan, how's it going?
It's good. It's good. I am now a certified...
You are certified.
...track rider at the Milton Velodrome now.
Congratulations. You went roundy-round a lot past few weekends.
It was sweet. I gotta say, I am sorry I didn't do that sooner.
Oh, so you're buying a new bike soon, are you?
And plus more problems, right?
That's awesome. We have a different kind of bike we're looking at, a tandem ride this episode.
Now, I've never been a tandem man myself, nor have I experienced one, but this one looks like a pretty good way to get used to riding a tandem.
They pretty much had to get used to it. It was a father and son. They rode from Nova Scotia to Soyuz, BC, and the trip was a while ago, but their takeaways from it are pretty cool about just like... starting your own adventure and just, you know, having the right attitude for trying something that you might be in over your head on.
You rode with your pa this weekend. How would the tandem fat biking have gone?
Oh, no. My father and I went fat biking and we had our own bikes and that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
I think that's the way to do it.
All right. Next on the show.
Full send, no send.
Oh, yeah. It's back.
It's back. Always back. We got some hot takes.
Yep. We got... a recap of sorts from the Zwift National Championships.
That's right.
Then we talk about the newfound success of Team Astana, everyone's favorite team run by a Bond villain.
That's my line. You stole my line.
It's a great line, though. All right. And then we talk about the upcoming Track World Championships. Give them some shine.
Or do we?
Ooh.
And then we will hear from everybody's favorite hard man, Svein Tuft.
Yeah, I recently saw the documentary Wonderful Losers, where he plays a starring role in an ice bath. Probably my favorite part of the movie is Svein in the ice bath, and then his camping on a cliff after.
As he does.
As he does.
All right, let's get into it. A few episodes ago, we spoke with Buck Miller and Ted King. These were two of four riders in the James Bay Descent. They previewed this ride for us and the 600 kilometers they would do on fat bikes across Northern Ontario. They're back. They made it. And they brought with them sounds and tales from their adventures. Let's listen to Buck and Ted and some of their... fellow riders, Eric Batty and Ryan Atkins.
Ten after five on the evening of night five. Looking at a beautiful sunset on South Bluff Creek on the Wheaton Winter Road. The road's not open to traffic, but we jumped out anyway, and we made it 50 kilometers today. And this is the creek I actually had my bachelor party on. My brother-in-law was the only guy that could make it, obviously, because we lived in the middle of nowhere, Moose Knee. We went up South Bluff Creek a long way in a canoe, fishing and camping for the whole long weekend, July long weekend, and now we're camping right beside on bikes. Super windy, crazy hard headwind today. Ted pretty well sat in the front for the whole 50k. We left late got on the road at like 10:30 and stopped riding at 4. And yeah, we got the tent up, built a big snow wall windbreak out of big hard blown ice or snow chunks, pile the bikes up, and hopefully that'll do for tonight. We're gonna put the wood stove in, warm up, and go to bed.
So our first day we had some issues in the tent department. It's pretty cold out. Our thermometers bottomed out at minus 30, and it was quite a bit colder than that, so not sure how cold it really got, but suffice to say it was cold. And
lights out.
Our hot tent was a little bit not that hot. We were just burning some alders that were pretty green.
Alder is the
choice wood for smoking meat for indigenous people because it doesn't burn well.
Yeah.
That's all we had. Yeah, we're the shore of James Bay.
We can attest to that. Yeah, so everybody got pretty cold overnight, various degrees. But, you know, we all survived, got up, headed out in the bay, checked it out a bit. We were told by multiple locals, indigenous people, that it was unsafe to head out onto the water, open water. They don't recommend it. We kind of went out there and poked around, ran into another guy who kind of said wasn't the greatest idea. We rode our bikes out a bit on some of the ice to get a feel of what riding was like. And, you know, you'd ride for 10 meters and it'd be nice and hard, and then you'd get a soft patch and it would be like super tough and just bumpy, and our bikes are so loaded that we were pretty worried we were going to break something. We had so much weight on the racks and panniers and stuff.
Yeah, our racks are our retrofits, universal fit racks for bikes with that'll go, you know, fit on any bike. So they don't have, our bikes don't have touring mounts, right?
Yeah. So they're kind of a bit wibbly wobbly. And yeah, so we decided that it was probably unsafe. If someone fell in the open water, it'd probably, you know, the end of them.
5K from shore where there's no firewood anyway.
Yeah. And yeah, we turned around and headed back to Attawabiskat and right through town, and then got started on the winter road heading south. So now we're camped out on the winter road and yeah, doing good.
Yeah, so for the record, Ted's been sleeping. He slept last night and it was really cold last night. And he slept with the top of his sleeping bag, the strings wide open.
I didn't know there were strings.
He didn't know there were strings on these mummy sleeping bags to cinch them shut around your neck. So the poor guy was frozen terribly, like, you know, very badly. Like he didn't sleep at all. We all felt pretty bad. We still do. I spent last night shivering in a body bag. And I said to the guys, I believe it was my... It started off my top 10 worst nights ever sleeping in the bush, and it's the more I thought about it, it entered the top 5. It's like 5th or 4th for sure. Worst nights I've ever slept outside. I was just freezing cold. I was in my bag for like 13 hours. And I just couldn't get warm. So, yeah, it's been tough, but spirits are high now. We're pretty cozy in a little tent on the side of the road. Looking forward to tomorrow.
Day 3 behind us.
Day 4 ahead of us. Started off magnificently when my pannier rack decided to nearly self-combust on my bike. That was less opportune. Mostly by user error.
Man, based on what I saw on Ted's bike today, like, thank goodness we didn't go down the bay because all our panniers would have fallen off.
I agree with that. The braking bumps on the road are, they're ice.
And we're still riding the silky part.
And even like the bulldozer tracks.
Yeah.
Like get all, it's crazy, yeah. And this road's beautiful compared to the Ouija road.
Yeah, we've got so much weight on them.
They're overweight like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
But you can't be underweight and have enough to live in 40 below for 10 days.
Yeah. Through some very quick thinking, which took about 85K to think of, I wrapped a tube around my seat stay.
We cut one of our good tubes up.
Oh, yeah?
Well,
so now we're down to 3.
It was not an ultralight, so it's probably only like a $20 tube. Yeah. But that gave it some wicked grip, so pleased in that decision. This took place at...
We all rolled out. It was a neutral start.
Oh, yeah, we've broken it into 2 teams.
Yeah.
Let's tell them about the teams.
And then right off the gun...
breakaway happened.
Yeah, Ted and I got some distance, and, you know, once we realized we had a gap, we just kept going. And
drop the hammer.
A couple mechanicals, we almost got caught by the pack.
Well, Ted got caught.
Yeah, we did catch Ted, but then he quickly attacked.
Yeah.
Put the hammer down, left the gruppetto behind.
Yeah, and then we decided to take a
counterattack to our move
into cash.
And then that's when...
Cool.
That's when the gruppetto passed you guys again.
That's when the danger happened.
Yeah. Because it's a, okay, 2.5K, 3K, call it 4K, into cache, which only took one detour and asking two people. Go there for what should have been a 15-minute stop, which probably was closer to 45. Get rolling again. What? 7 wrong turns?
Yeah. We kept asking people where to go, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, you just go that way. And they'd kind of point, and we'd be like, okay, and we start riding that way, and we'd get a wrong turn.
And we feel like we're asking pretty basic directions, like, can we go, how do you get to the winter road? And it takes them a lot of time to think about it. It's like, isn't it a pretty obvious route? Like, we're asking like, where the main highway is.
The only highway.
Yeah. The only road in and out.
We're just over halfway from Attawapiskat to Moosonee. And there's snow in the forecast, which I think
will suck. Bit
concerned of. Just because now they're calling for up to 35 centimeters of snow or 40 centimeters. So that's, the going was pretty good today. We had a little bit of a headwind out of the southwest, then south and southeast. Not bad, but just enough to slow you down, especially when you're pedaling a 100-pound bike. But yeah, it was a good day.
Day five?
I think so. Here we are, dispatches from the road. We're on the Weedham Road, and it's close to vehicles right now because of all the snow we got, but you know, technically we're not cars, so they let us go, and we're cruising down south. Going is good, a little snowy, a little blustery, but we got a bit of a tailwind. Sun's out, guns out, and we're just cruising. It's great.
Thinking 30K is a big day. We don't really know how much you can do today. The road's pretty slow.
Yeah, the road's definitely not quick. We're pushing a little snow, you know, a couple centimeters. Super hard, crispy, crunchy snow. But it's okay.
Boom. Well, we made
five, the... 5, 4, look at the camera.
Taking a picture for the Native Friendship Center. Yes, boys.
Yo, yo.
Say hi to the peeps, the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast.
We are...
I just did the jacket up on my freaking beard.
So we made it to the Moosonee Friendship Center.
Hip deep snow.
$6,000 we raised. There's like a full-on blizzard. It's a real blizzard too, by northern standards.
We've got a crowd here watching us.
We've got a crowd here watching us.
Just visited a school.
Yeah.
Went this to Moosonee Public School, said hello. The only place, I think, one of the few places you can bring a 12-gauge shotgun into a school. Okay, let's just do a serious picture so we don't lose this one.
Video.
We got a picture already.
Oh, okay, this sweet.
Footage. Should we do like a few pictures?
We did 3, like.
We'll do that again. Those.
Yeah, that worked.
Those were the voices of Buck Miller, Ted King, Eric Batty, and Ryan Atkins. They were all members of the James Bay Descent. It was a trip across northern Ontario, and they also raised money for the Moosonee office of the Timmins Native Friendship Center.
Hey, Matt.
What's up?
We got a sponsor.
Oh, that's great. Who is it?
Well, they're challenging you to do something epic. It's the Ride to Conquer Cancer, Canada's largest cycling fundraiser.
That's awesome. No, this is a very cool event because it's a great charity, but it's also a great ride, and it's a ride that can get riders of all kind involved.
Yeah, so it's 2 days, over 200 kilometers. So that's a good challenge, and you know what? That makes it worth it, you know, all that training you're doing right now in the winter. Something like this is a great goal to shoot for.
Right. So you sign up and you can raise vital funds to support cancer research, treatment advances, education, and new standards of care at cancer centers and research facilities across Canada.
So as you probably know, almost 1 in 2 Canadians will be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime. And this is one of those charities that's going to have you riding to change that.
So what should people do, Dan?
Register today at conquercancer.ca and save $50 when you use the promo code PODCAST at sign up. Again, that's promo code PODCAST, PODCAST, at conquercancer.ca. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Full Send, No Send. Adam, is your thumb ready?
My thumb is ready, and 3, 2, 1, go.
All right, Matthew, this weekend, yeah, it was the second annual Zwift National Championship weekend.
Amazing.
Canada, as you know, had its own, being a winter nation.
We have two champions now.
Yes. Congrats to Stephanie Osenbrink, yes, and Warren Muir, both of BC and Alberta, respectively.
Nice.
Yeah. I want to talk about Warren's stats here. Pretty impressive. Average 4.6 watts per kilo, peaking with a 16 watts per kilo 1 minute average. Some pretty solid numbers. And
not too shabby.
He took down some pretty big names in the Canadian cycling world.
Really?
A Nick Zerkowski of Floyd's.
Yes.
Yep. You might know a Lionel Sanders of the triathlon world.
Yeah, wow. Yeah,
trainer, rider extraordinaire.
Yeah.
And Derek St. John of CrossFit.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what's your full send, no send on this? Or what's your angle here?
I'm full send on it. I think the only problem,
yes,
is where do you wear the jersey?
Now, which jersey? Your digital jersey?
Do you wear an IRL e-championship digital jersey? Like, can you wear that on your trainer?
I think that's the only place to wear, because you're not going to wear it in a road race outside. You're not going to wear it in a time trial outside or a crit. So that pretty much leaves your custom IRL jersey for you in your pain cave.
So, okay, here's a real question though. Are you even allowed? That's not a real question, but are you allowed to even wear it, or can you only wear a pixelated digital version?
What are you talking? Like, are we talking in
Zwift? Only your avatar can wear it? Are you not actually allowed to wear it because you're not in the game?
Oh man, this is an epistemological problem that I'm not ready for.
You know what? Creators of Zwift.
Or maybe it's a metaphysical problem.
Let's hear from the creators of Zwift.
It's a philosophical problem.
Yeah, I want to hear from the game designers. What should we do? What's the etiquette here? Get back to us.
All yeah, right. Okay.
Okay, moving on.
Podcast at cyclingmagazine.ca. Okay, here's a, is it okay to like Astana now? Astana has had a stellar February.
Yes.
I'm just trying to pull up their stats here. They've been winning.
Yes.
Like a lot. And what is it about winning that makes you go, okay, maybe you have a Bond villain for a team principal.
Yep.
But suddenly, Jakob Fuglsang winning at Vuelta Andalusia. You've got a bunch of stage wins.
Izaguirre brothers winning a whole bunch of things as well. You know, maybe it's also that they've got a good Canadian connection.
That is a part. That was where the Astana thaw started for me.
Yeah.
Hugo Hull.
Yeah. It's like Hugo. He's a good kid. He carries his own stuff. You know, it couldn't be that bad.
That's right. So I'm trying to reconcile myself with Astana. I don't know if I can be full send Astana rah 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 yet, because I don't know.
Okay.
I've spent so long being at least ambivalent towards that team.
Okay, here's what would do it for me. Hugo Hull, spokesman for Quebec Maple Syrup. Quebec Maple Syrup sponsors Team Astana, then they're the Team Maple Syrup. What's more Canadian than that?
So you just want to wrap it in a maple leaf, no exactly. matter how sticky. That makes everything okay.
Plus, Argon 18 bikes. They're riding Canadian engineering.
Yes, of course they are. And actually, in the next issue of Canadian Cycling Magazine, we have a feature on Notio, a Montreal company that's helping Astana with their aerodynamics in their
So TTT. Pretty much Canada is the reason Astana's any good.
You always have these grandiose claims for our country. It's cute.
I'm rolling with it.
All right.
Okay. Next weekend, this weekend coming up.
Actually, right now when this podcast is going.
Yes, when we're live, when it's in your ears.
Yep.
The Track World Championships will be live.
Yes, and can you say the name of the Polish city in which the world track champs are in?
Pruszków?
Not bad, I guess. My go at it is Pruszków.
Pruszków.
That's my take.
That's your take?
I'm sure I'm still not very correct, but anyway,
do we have a pronunciation guide to this?
We have a minute left to talk about this, so let's have a minute. So is track cycling too boring?
It can be.
It pains me to say
full send, no send. It's a full send on this because it could be cool. Like 6-day racing is fun. You got lasers, you got smoke shows, you got beers in the stands. you go to a World Cup and a UCI event, it's not really that.
But World Cup events, when you're there, it's a good day out at the track. You see lots of racing. I feel like it just doesn't make it to television or streaming very well.
Yeah, you don't quite get a grasp of the speed and, importantly, how slow the sprinters go at the start when they're like,
Or the tactics of the Madison, or just the head spinningness of the Madison. Like, you can maybe get a better handle on it when you're there. On television, it's just rider soup.
That's it. But you know what? More lasers, more smoke shows.
We're out of time. That would do great things for it. But yes, more 6 day, more jazz in the infield like back in the day. And we're out of time. Full Send, No Send, a success as always. About 11 years ago, Coburn and Doug Brown took off on a tandem bike ride. Now, this wasn't any tandem bike ride. It was one from the Annapolis Valley in Nova Scotia to a Soyuz, British Columbia. That's a long way to go when you're on your own bike, but imagine being on a tandem. These are bikes that are known for challenging even the best relationships. In some ways, this trip was on a whim, and in some ways, these guys weren't as prepared as they should be. But I think what I love about this story is the lessons they learned, which will apply to any big adventure you're going to take on two wheels, whether that's sharing those two wheels with another person or on your own set. First, we'll hear from Coburn, and then we'll hear from his father, Doug.
I was 14 at the time. I don't think we didn't really have too much of a plan, actually. It was just something he had always wanted to do, and we just had a good excuse to do it. So we sort of packed our bags and away we went.
The idea for the bike ride was mine. I had always wanted to ride across the country. And once I had the tandem and I was getting a little old, it was either now or never. The point of the trip was to go to Soyuz and then on towards Kelowna. Coburn's great-grandmother, his last great-grandmother, was turning 90, and they're all pretty close family, so we wanted to go see her. And then I just wanted to do it. I just wanted to see this vast country. Spearville, New Brunswick, just close to Woodstock, is where we started the trip, and then we headed into Quebec. And then from there, Northern Ontario and across the prairies.
There was a bit of a timeline. We had 33 days from leaving Nova Scotia to get to Soyuz, BC. That was when the birthday party happened.
At the time I left on a trip, my fitness level probably wasn't as good as it has been in the past. As we all know, our cycling journey has its ups and downs, and this was certainly not a year for putting in a lot of mileage in. I was running a bakery as well as doing a sales job, so I was sitting in a car for 6-7 hours a day sometimes, driving through the Maritimes, staying overnight in motels. So I started the trip at 185 and I finished at about 160 pounds. So I needed to lose some weight, and that was the way to do it.
Well, I don't think we had ever been camping together before we left on this trip, and you know, it was never something that really crossed my mind at that point in my life. I think, you know, you're still at the point at 14 where you sort of think your parents can do everything and anything, no matter what, even if you've never seen them do it or ever heard them talk about ever going camping before. So I just assumed he had it under control. But when I look back at it now, I don't think he had set up a tent in 20 or 30 years. The first week, a week and a bit, I can't remember exactly how many days, we were staying in tents. We'd roll into a campground after a long day on the bike and, you know, sort of fumble around and try and set up the tent. And, most campsites, some of them had picnic tables, which was nice. Some of them didn't. And we really struggled. I can remember not having a place to really sit down except for the ground after a long day on the bike. And, you know, you're trying to move around and get food ready and having to either kneel down or squat on the ground, I remember was quite challenging, even for a 14-year-old. So I can imagine what it was like for my father at the time. And it was also quite heavy, you know, it was older camping equipment. So it really took a toll on our bike and the trailer we were using to carry things. And after a bit of a catastrophic failure, a week or so into the trip, and, you know, some uncomfortableness in the campgrounds, we decided that we'd ditch all of that at a grandparent's house and continue on just going from hotel to hotel.
I've always wanted a tandem. I found a good deal on a trip to Maine on one of my sales trips. So Coburn and I had ridden quite a bit together, off-road and road riding in the Annapolis Valley here. And the thought was that he'd spin us out along the flats because he had good aerobic capacity, but he didn't have the muscle mass yet, only being 14 years old to get up hills. So historically, when we were riding together here, I'd lose him on the hills and we'd be pretty well matched on the flats. So I thought I could grind up the hills and he could push me on the flats. It seemed to work out okay. You know, I've heard people call tandems divorce machines, but for in our family, it certainly has not been the case. With Coburn and I, it allowed me not to get frustrated waiting for him on the hills and him not to get anxious and worried about keeping up. And same with when Joy, my wife, and I ride it, just we can talk. We don't have to worry. We can pedal each as hard as we want. And we don't have to worry about falling behind or getting too far ahead. So it worked out perfect for us.
So the tandem, well, the biggest thing is that it was red, and my father has owned a red Calnago, I think since he was 17 or something, maybe he was 18. And he's always liked the color red because he believes it makes him go faster. And he just showed up at home with a bike strapped to the roof of our little Toyota Echo, which the tandem was about the same length as the car. And yeah, we started riding that around and...
Yeah, many positive aspects of the tandem running, but certainly some drawbacks. The big one was one of the big ones for me was mental, seeing Coburn sitting up, seeing his shadow sit up in the back of the tandem taking pictures or chewing on some food, and I couldn't do that. So once we hit the prairies, we worked on it so that we could both ride freehand on a tandem, and I could give my hands a break, my back a break. The other thing at times too, it just seemed after working hard or standing up for a while, it just seemed like somebody dropped an anchor. And at the time, I probably blamed Coburn for not pulling his own weight. But so, yeah, there were issues. But the positives certainly outweighed the negatives.
Sometimes, until you get used to it, there can definitely be a lack of control until you both understand how the other person really rides. And we had ridden it quite a lot before starting on this trip, but even so, there was some learning curves along the way, and one of them just being how much control, how much influence that person in the back can have, and that can be a benefit if you use it, you know, if you're aware of it and you've practiced it a lot. But the person in the back, you know, really has to be careful just about how they shift their weight or how much influence they have over that person up front, because it can really affect how the tandem moves. And then also there's a couple days in Northern Ontario and going through the prairies when it would be extremely hot, and it would be a very long day before you get to get off the tandem, and everybody sweats and everybody smells. So you're in very close proximity to each other, and that would be a drawback for sure.
The advice I'd like to give anybody that's trying to do a trip like this is just to have fun and stay safe. Make sure you have the necessary precautions. Take the necessary precautions as you're riding, just like you do on your normal rides. And recognize that Canadians, by and large, are more than willing to help people out if you get in a jam. We got stuck in riding around in cold, miserable rain, and had a broken spoke on a tandem. And a woman in the bike store that we went in to get it fixed invited us to her house, did all her laundry, made us supper, and send us on our way the next morning. So if you're going to do it, just be sensible about it. You know, I think we probably underestimated the time it would take. So be a little more realistic about your fitness levels and your timeline is probably the biggest thing that I would recommend to people trying this trip is we were very fortunate in only having 2 days of rain on the whole trip. So we got quite lucky that way. I think if we had had a lot more inclement weather, we probably would have been late. But have fun, stay safe, and don't overestimate your abilities.
I don't know. I think it's different for everybody, but I think overall, you just sort of need to just jump into it. And, you know, I think if my father and I had have thought about it and planned things out too much, we might have realized that, ooh, maybe this isn't a good idea, and it might not have ever happened.
Doug and Coburn Brown, our father and son riding duo from the Annapolis Valley in Nova Scotia. How much Swain Tuft is too much Swain Tuft? I don't think there is too much. And I hope you agree because we've had him on the podcast quite a few times. And earlier this year, Molly Herford, our contributor, spoke with the legendary, I think it's fair to say, legendary Canadian road cyclist at the Rally UHC Cycling Team Camp. Here are some of Swain's thoughts about riding in the Pro Peloton and on riding with his new team.
Am I pronouncing your name right?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Okay, awesome. I read up on how to do it beforehand, yeah. Just to make sure. This is probably a question that's very, you know, obvious and you get asked it a lot, but how long have you been riding bikes and how do you remember what your first ride was like? Like, what made you love it?
Yeah, so I would say, like, really riding bikes, I would have been about 18 years old. I dropped out of high school. Prior to that, and I was obsessed with rock climbing and getting out into the mountains, and a bike was a way to travel for cheap. So it started out as a means to try and get out to the mountains to climb and do some adventures, and then all of a sudden my first trip I was hooked, and that was a trip going out to like the coast range, which is kind of in you know, on the west coast of British Columbia. And as soon as I got a taste for life on the road, that was it. And then for quite a few years, I spent time touring up to Alaska and down towards Mexico. And I was just obsessed with traveling by bike with my dog and the trailer and all that stuff. So that wasn't competitive cycling, and I'm certainly glad it wasn't, because I don't know if I would have made it as a younger person in a structured world of professional cycling. But for sure, I was doing some hard biking at that point in my life.
So you're just like OG bike bum.
Yeah. I think back to that time, and it's like, I think of how I lived, and it's just so crazy. Like, you know, Jonas, we were driving down the 101, and he pointed out the Motel 6 that we stayed in Prime Alliance in 2002. And that was the camp I rode down from Vancouver to here to... Basically, just got there the day before camp started, and it rained every day. It was like start of February, and it was just, I was sleeping in the woods, a bivouac bag, and going to bed like soaking wet every night. That was a rough trip, but I got through that camp, and somehow here I am. So,
what was your first race? Do you remember it? Like, what point were you like, I could do this as a career? Forget the climbing.
The one where I really first noticed it would have been like in the Cat 3 or 4 group in a race called it was an American race in Washington, and I just rode solo from the gun, and and I think maybe I won by 5 minutes or something, but just really crappy equipment and not knowing how to do really anything to do with road cycling, just ride hard. So at that point I was just convinced that this is what I'm doing, and I never really thought any other way. So
that's amazing. And I mean, as I was like reading through everything about you, I was wondering, it ever occurred to you to get on like a mountain bike or cyclocross or something that was kind of more of that gritty, where the bike bums traveling up and down the coast tend to go?
It's really strange because that's a great point. I don't know why the road stuff appealed to me, because I guess I'm a bit of a mixed character, because that type A kind of like just smashing yourself and pushing yourself all the time kind of attracts me, and yet at the same time it's also something I'm kind of against as well. So that's probably a lot of my confusion and internal stuff that's gone on over the years, you know, trying to sort out that self about myself. But I mean, all of us have a psychology to why we do stuff. And you know, part of why I did those trips is that I was, you know, as a young person, you're just trying to figure out who the hell you are. And I was really trying to, and I certainly found out a lot about myself, but I'm still finding out a ton about myself. So yeah, I think it's really important for young people to do adventures like that.
Yeah. And I mean, kind of flash forward to now, it seems like development for especially road, but I mean every cycling discipline, starts so young now. So you have, you know, even kids on rally that are probably the age you were, you know, when you were still just bumming around and having fun on bikes. What kind of advice do you give these younger people who are already on, you know, super intense training regimens since they're 13 years old?
Slow down. And they hate to hear it, but I always tell them, you know, like I didn't start racing until I was 23. And I'm not saying I'm an example to go by or that I have this great knowledge that it's all going to be okay. But I look at the way they're obsessing about, I mean, I'm fortunate I didn't come up in the time of all this data. But I just feel like by the time a lot of these guys are reaching their where they should be building physical strength, they've already done all the one percenters. There's nowhere to go. And they know everything about how to train. They know exactly how many watts they need to go up this climb and so on and so forth. But for me, they're just taking away from what they can be down the road and chipping away from the block, because it's a long road. I look at myself, I've been fortunate, but you know, I've had a long career only starting when I was 23 years old. So there's no rush. And to force yourself when you're young and still developing, in my mind, like I told you before, I don't think I would have made it. I think that rigid, structured life would have really cracked me. And I see young guys and the seriousness they have. And I respect it, because I get how, you know, appealing the sport is to be up there with the best. And they see some of these, you know, these genetic anomalies come along every now and then, and they want to be like that. But not all of us are like that. And so you have to give your body time, and you have to just take the steps in the right way. And it's so hard to do, I know, because modern society has just promoted everything happening right now, and they want it so fast. But if you don't love it, forget about it, because it might take you 10 years before you start making money. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you're after and all that stuff, the odds, let's look at the odds. The odds are real slim. So yeah, love it first. And you know, for me, I never wanted to go to Europe. I never wanted to look at it as a job.
Yeah.
I loved what I was doing. So it just kind of worked out. I was lucky, but for sure it was more because I was willing to do the time, because I loved it.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Swain Tuft is a professional road cyclist on Rally UHC Cycling. He spoke with contributor Molly Herford. And that's the episode. It was put together by Dan Walker, Philippe Tremblay, me, Matthew Piero, and was produced by Adam Killick. Special thanks to the Ontario Media Development Corporation for its support.
Now, if you want to send us more full send, no send ideas, send us an email at podcast@cyclingmagazine.ca.
And our Ask a Coach with Peter Glassford will be back. So you can send questions to Peter at that same address, podcast@cyclingmagazine.ca.
Now, if you want to know more about what Canadian Cycling Magazine is doing on the web, take a look at cyclingmagazine.ca. On Instagram, we're at Canadian Cycling. On Twitter, we're also at Canadian Cycling. But on Facebook, we're at Cycling Mag.
Just to mix it up.
Just to keep it cool.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, download, rate, subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, TuneIn, or even an RSS feed. That'll work too.
There's so many ways to find
this. No excuses. Now, who should they tell to download this week, Matthew?
Yes. So when you are getting snacks ready for watching the track world champs in Poland, you're getting maybe some punchki at the Polish bakery, tell them, you know what, you should subscribe to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. And listeners, please head over and rate and review. 5 stars help us out a lot. We'll see you on the flip side.